Greetings. My name is Nick, and I'm one of the pastors here at St. Catherine's United Mennonite Church. It's good to be back. After a month of parental leave, I'm back in the office this week and back to things. I'm certainly grateful for that time, those weeks with family, and for you as a church accommodating that. And looking forward to sharing a bit more about that in the weeks to come, but appreciate that opportunity. One of the things I've appreciated is watching, tracking along with the services and messages that have been made available while I've been away. If you've been watching those as well, you'll be aware that we're preparing for a restart of our in-person services. To prepare for that, we've planned for a small rehearsal service on August 30th. We've invited just a small group of people who indicated on the survey we sent out early in the summer that they'd be willing to participate immediately. I invited them to join us for this, hearing eagerness on the part of others to come out, but asking, unless you've received an invitation, to wait for the week to follow. Pastor Randy has recorded a walkthrough video to give a sense of what these adapted services will look like, because they will look different, just as so many parts of our lives look different right now. If you've not had a chance to watch that already, I'd encourage you to go see it. We've included a link to that on the main page of our website, just below this video. This past week as well, we sent out a letter with our e-bulletin, and it's going out with our mailings as well, just detailing these plans for services, what it's going to look like. I recognize that some of you might not be able to watch the videos, and we want to make sure everyone's aware and prepared for that. We'd ask you to take the time and look through it. It's a lot of information. We appreciate you going through it, and it helps us as we get ready for those. We've heard from some of you that you're not planning to return to in-person services. Some of you because you're someone who is at high risk, or you live with somebody who is, or perhaps because you're not quite comfortable participating in that way yet. If that is the case for you, that's fine. We want to assure you that we'll still be providing videos online and mailing out our sermons as well for those who would like them. Understand that these changes will take some time to get used to. As a church, we're working with public health guidelines as well as a number of sets of guidelines that have been provided for churches, for the governments, to make sense of what worship looks like in this time. And we're also working with what we've heard from you in these past months. We appreciate your grace, your understanding as we adjust to these new realities as best we can. We're committed to maintaining connection, spiritual connection, as best we can, as well as keeping one another safe as best we can, and trying to balance those two things. All the while, we continue to look to God for strength and wisdom as we make our way forward with that. I'm out in the wilderness today, sort of. I'm actually fairly close to civilization. I'd be hard-pressed to get lost if I tried just a few minutes walk away from the car. But I'm as deep in the wilderness as I could get with the time I had this week. So out in the forest, along the Bruce Trail that I love here in Grimsby. And today for our service, we're continuing our series that we've called A Way Through the Wilderness, in which we're looking at the story of the Israelites as they wandered through the desert, as well as looking at our own wilderness experiences as we've come to go through them in this time. And so I'll share these words from Psalm 78 as our call for worship today. He divided the sea and led them through. He made the water stand up like a wall. He guided them with cloud by day and with lights from the fire all night. He split the rocks in the wilderness and gave them water as abundant as the seas. He brought streams out of a rock crag and made water flow down like rivers. But they continued to sin against him, rebelling in the wilderness against the Most High. They willfully put God to the test by demanding the food they craved. They spoke against God. They said, "Can God really spread a table in the wilderness?" True, he struck the rock and water gushed out. Streams flowed abundantly. But can he also give us bread? Can he supply meat for his people? that psalm ends on a point of tension. And that's the point of tension that I'm hoping to explore today in our message. And so as you participate in this online service today, I would invite you to sit with that question. Can God really spread a table in the wilderness?
I'm reading from Exodus chapter 17, verses 1 to 7. The whole Israelite community set out from the desert of Sin, traveling from place to place as the Lord commanded. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. So they quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." Moses replied, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test?" But the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses. They said, "Why did you bring us out of Egypt to make us and our children and livestock die of thirst?" Then Moses cried to the Lord, "What am I to do with these people? They are almost ready to stone me." The Lord answered Moses, "Walk on ahead of the people. Take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. I will stand there before you by the rock at Horeb. Strike the rock, and water will come out of it for the people to drink." So Moses did this in the sight of the elders of Israel, and he called the place Massah and Meribah, because the Israelites quarreled and because they tested the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?"
Earlier this summer, I read a book called The Line Becomes a River. It's written by a writer named Francisco Cantu, who studies the U.S.-Mexico border, especially as it relates to illegal crossings from Mexico into the United States. Cantu talks at length about the perils of attempting to make that crossing in a barren landscape and in those extreme temperatures. Shares multiple first-hand experiences in these chapters, having worked as a border agent as well, telling stories of people who tried to make it to America but didn't, or people who were just barely alive by the time that they were picked up by agents. You've probably heard news stories, reports like his before. They're often tragic and heartbreaking stories. Stories about people just so desperate to leave the place they live in, to get to a new place, a better place, that they're willing to risk everything, risk their entire life, entire lives to journey through the desert to get there. And the issue most often when you hear those stories is water. Without it, people simply can't survive for long in the wilderness heat. Migrants and coyotes or paid guides, as they're called, they might try to pack water and bring it with. But if you've ever gone backcountry camping like I have, you'll know that water's heavy. And so they try to bring as much as they can, but they often don't carry enough and end up running out, often with really tragic results. The political and justice and human rights issues here are complex. This is a charged and divisive issue, clearly, especially south of our border. For some, the matter is clear. These people are breaking the law and ought to be treated accordingly. Others feel a more compassionate response is demanded. And so one of the responses has been for activists and advocates to go out into the wilderness, out into the borderlands, and to leave containers full of water for those migrants to find and to drink as they make their way across. Today we're continuing our series called A Way Through the Wilderness, in which we're exploring this desert journey of the people of ancient Israel as we find it in the pages of the book of Exodus. We're considering how that story might come to inform our own stories as we seek to find a way as God's people through this time we find ourselves in, this really unique time in history. And the story that we've heard read today is about water. When Taya shared a couple of weeks back, we heard about a story, another story about God providing for the people. Then she told us how they had come to a place called the Desert of Sin and had upon arrival promptly begun complaining. The rumbling of their empty stomachs turned into this grumbling to Moses and to God. They needed something to eat, and all they saw around them was just empty sand and sky. We heard that God heard their cries and provided food for them. God provided manna, this bread-like substance, and quail, these birds, for them to eat. With that as a bit of a backdrop, today's story is going to sound familiar. Here in this text, in this chapter, we see the people of Israel leave the desert of Sin and go on and make camp and make camp again until they come to this other place called Rephidim. And they have a steady supply of food now with this manna and these birds that appear each morning. But what they don't have is water, which is a problem when you're in the wilderness. It's a problem when you're a migrant making your way across the desert with no end in sight. So they come to Moses again. They approach their leader and begin leveling complaints at him, just as they did before. We're parched, they tell him. We're going to dry up if you don't find us something to drink. Why are we doing this anyways? Why did you bring us here? Does God find it funny that we'd be spared from death and freed from slavery in Egypt only to shrivel up in the sands once we're out? You're a leader. Why won't you do something, won't you? So Moses comes before God, because what else can Moses do in that situation? What do you want me to do, he asks God. Their unrest is about to turn violent. If they don't get what they're demanding, they're going to take it out on me. Just watch, he says to God. This will turn to revolt. They're desperate and angry, and they're going to see to it that I die out here before they do. We read that God listens to Moses and replies and says this: go out ahead of the people, take with you some of the other leaders, and take the wooden staff, that same staff that you used before when you stood before Pharaoh. And when you come to that great rock that you see, the rock that I lead you to, strike it, and water will flow out. Then the people will have something to drink. We've shared a number of times in these past weeks about how these last several months have maybe felt like a wilderness journey, a wilderness season for many of us. We reflect on how we can maybe recognize something of our own situation and the situation that we find in these pages. How we can maybe recognize some of those same tendencies and impulses in ourselves that we see here in the people of ancient Israel. Like them, I think that many of us have been uncomfortable traveling between these borders. We've struggled to remain patient and at peace in the in-between. I can tell you that I certainly have. Ruth Haley Barton, a spiritual director and writer, writes about this story from the book of Exodus, in one of her books. She says that when we find ourselves in a place of wilderness, like the ancient Israelites did, there's a temptation to want to run to the place that feels most secure. And one of the ways that we do this, she writes, is by wanting to get back to the way things were before all this. Bring us back to Egypt, the people tell Moses. We want to return to the familiar, even if that means being somebody else's property and baking bricks all day long. It's human nature to prefer certainty to ambiguity, to prefer known traditions to unknowing trust. So we might, in these days, find ourselves joining the chorus that we hear in these pages. Turn us around and then take us back. The other way we sometimes do this, Ruth Haley Barton writes, is to try to move in the opposite direction. We want to rush on to the other side, towards the future, towards Canaan, towards the milk and the honey. Why does God have us dawdling about in the desert like this? Why won't Moses move us along one way or another? Why the wait? I think we can recognize both impulses in ourselves these days. I want to go back to normal, we might say, or I can't wait till we're done with this all. Ruth Haley Barton shares this quote in her book. She writes that being in a place of wilderness and waiting is a unique spiritual position where human beings hate to be, but where the biblical God is always leading them. It's when you've left the tried and true, but you've not been able to replace it with anything else. It's when you're between your old comfort zone and any new possible answer. Let me stop and repeat that one more time and ask if that doesn't describe your life, our lives, to a T right now. Being in the wilderness is when you have left the tried and true, but you've not yet been able to replace it with anything else. It's when you're between your old comfort zone and any new possible answer. And she goes on to write this as part of the quote. If you find yourself in the wilderness and you're not trained in how to hold that anxiety, how to live with that ambiguity, how to entrust and wait, you'll run. The people of Israel wanted to run. They wanted to either go back or move ahead. They wanted to be anywhere but the in-between, anywhere but that wilderness place that they found themselves in. They wanted anything but the discomfort and desperation they experienced being in that liminal space, because they didn't know how to entrust and wait, as Ruth Haley Barton says. They doubted God could provide for them in the wilderness. The present in their perspective was this barren, lifeless, empty space. There was no food, they thought. There was nothing to drink, they said. In their view, what they needed was either behind or ahead of them, not in the present, not where they were. To be fair, their needs were real, in the same way that the needs that we've come to experience in these past months have been real as well. We can recognize, I think, some of that same frustration that the people of Israel had, of being kept safe from one form of suffering only to then have to deal with another. We're kept more or less safe from the virus if we do the things we need to, but in doing that, we then feel like we've entered into a whole new territory of suffering. Loneliness and change and loss and strain and exhaustion. We're out of Egypt, but now we're dying of thirst in the deserts. What good is that? We can relate. The people of Israel struggled to trust and to recognize God's provision in the in-between. They wanted to run. The same way I think that we hear a lot of talk about lockdown fatigue or pandemic fatigue these days. They want to give up and go back. Even if it means returning to captivity, even if it means suffering, because that suffering is better than this suffering, they say. In the midst of all that mess, however, what we once again see is the miracle of God making a way for what they needed in that moment. They didn't have to run to find it. God provides for them in that very presence.
God tells Moses to go to that great rock in that place called Horeb. And Moses does this, we read, and the elders of Israel circle around him and watch as he goes. And Moses strikes the stone with the staff, as God told him to. And we see the water spill out, and the people of Israel, the people of the community, come forward and lap it up. And after this, after they had drank their fill and gone away, we're told that Moses names the place Massa and Meribah, because the Israelites quarreled and tested the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" One of the reasons I find this story so comforting and assuring is that God's grace is so very clearly shown to the people of Israel, even when they're clearly being a pain. God gives them water even when they're in the wrong. Because throughout this story, throughout these stories, we see them gripe and grumble. They push and pull and quarrel and complain. They try to test God instead of trusting God. They come to God with demands rather than devotion. They ask if God is really even there. They're impatient and frustrated and take it out again and again on each other and on their leaders and directed towards God. And again, God shows them grace. Again and again, God sees that deep need beneath all of that and provides for them. I find that comforting because if you're like me, you've done your fair share of all that these past several months as well. If you're like me, you've complained about the endless minor conveniences that mark all our days now. You've voiced the pain of deeper losses and frustrations. You've raised your voice about broken systems. You've griped about people whose behavior has frustrated you and quarreled with others who've come to this all with a different approach or a different level of seriousness than you. God could have given up on the people of Israel, and God could have given up on you and me, but God hasn't. God gives and gives and gives. God extends grace even when we grumble, provides for us even when we're being a pain. God gives people water even when they're wrong. This is where I come back to the connection with the stories of the U.S.-Mexico border. Again, these are complex issues, and yet what we see with those who leave water in the desert for these migrants is a kind of act of grace. I believe it's a gesture of compassion in the wilderness that mirrors, albeit very dimly, God's provision for the people of Israel in their time. I think we see that even in the language that's sometimes used to describe these volunteers. Border angels, they're often called. I've shared a short film online. You can see a link to it in the notes here, profiling some of those people who regularly go out and leave water, containers of water, in the desert there. If you watch it, which I'd encourage you to take the time to, you'll hear them share about some of the reasons for wanting to do this, for doing this. "We just want to make sure people don't die out here while they're trying to get a life," one of the activists says. "The act is very simple," another explains. "When someone is thirsty, you're going to give them something to drink." The temptation, of course, is to not show mercy. Francisco Cantu, in his book, talks about how when those containers of water are left in the desert by volunteers, they're often slashed open or crushed by agents or others, bled open to drain into the sand. And they show examples of this and talk about it in the clip as well. "What rights," these people ask, do they have to complain about being thirsty or hungry if they're foolish enough to try to make it across? They don't deserve to be helped. They're illegals. They ought to be deterred, not encouraged or supported. They can come across properly or die in the desert." God could have been like that. God could be like that. God could slash the bottles so they drain out in the sands. God could have chosen to be like that to the people of Israel and to you and me. But that's not the loving heart of God that we see in this ancient story. Here we see the God who makes water spring from the stone for those who truly need it. Here we encounter the God who gives and shows grace even to those who grumble, who so lovingly sees beneath our neediness and the ways that we sometimes so badly bear it out in our lives. and provides for what we truly need. And the invitation, of course, is for us to go and do likewise for others, for our grumbling to be transformed into gratitude and giving as we come to receive and recognize God's gifts and God's grace in our lives. The invitation is for us to find ways to offer water to others in their wilderness journeys as well, even if they're being a pain. In this story, the people of Israel were primarily concerned about self-preservation, and for good reasons, as many of us have over these past months as well. And yet, in experiencing God's care as they did, we're invited to move beyond that and extend care for others as well. And so as we carry on through these wilderness days, may you recognize God's provision in your life. May you see the ways that God has shown you and those around you grace, even when you've grumbled. The ways that God has continued to care for you, even in those moments when you've complained. And in those times when you find yourself just wanting to run, whether it's ahead or back, may you find what you need to entrust and to wait, knowing that the God who provides water is with you. At one point in that short documentary I shared, you'll see that the camera pan downwards and watch as those volunteers write messages in Spanish and English on those plastic water bottles. Messages written with Sharpies for the people crossing who might find them. Seguir adelante, one reads. Keep going. And then another, Yamero Yigan. You're almost there. And then we see that the volunteers hold up these jugs that they left earlier and that they've now come back to find in the deserts. Empty jugs, but not slashed open or crushed like the others, but those that have been drunk dry by those crossing. God has provided and will continue to provide in the wilderness. Keep going. You're almost there. Amen. I would invite you to pray with me. This is a prayer written by Amy Loving. God, we confess that we are an impatient and selfish people. When you offer us the promise of a new future, we complain that you don't get us there fast enough. When you provide for our needs, we complain that it isn't enough. And when our bad attitudes and negative outlooks cause us to stumble, we blame you. Holy God, forgive our sinful ways. Teach us to be patient, instruct us to be grateful, guide us to be responsible and humble. As we turn ourselves around and look to the cross, let us experience your grace and the gift of new life. In the name of Christ, our Savior, we pray. Amen.